Hey y'all, and welcome back to Gimme the Creeps with Abby and Daniela.
Hello, hello.
This week, we're gonna go towards the light, if you will, to hospice care.
Oh!
Which we know it is very sad. Most often, sometimes family doesn't come visit whoever they have in hospice care, but the nurses are there and the nurses see everything, and I have a few stories to share.
Oh, terrifying. And I'm by myself. This is just
as am I. So yeah, that's what we're doing today. And I actually don't really know too much about the last days. I have not had that happen in my life yet, but I know it will, so I'm not looking forward to that. So whoever has gone through this, my heart is with you. But the emotion and everything behind it, obviously, we know about. But I didn't know that as someone's health is like declining, that you can like start hallucinating and stuff. Like, I didn't know.
Yes, yes.
Which I knew your brain kind of starts doing different things whenever you're like going to pass away soon. Like the chemicals are going and whatever. But, and like your heart rate starts to decrease, like things like that. But, oh, and they say like the last night, like they bounce back and it seems like, oh, wow, you're doing so well, which is so sad because you get so excited. Like maybe she can come home or, you know, like things like that. But it's just part of it. Like they kind of bounce back and they have a moment of clarity, a moment, if they're lucky, you know, most of the time they get to come back and say they're, you know, whatever, see their family again, who's been visiting, who's been coming to see them. But then within a few hours, they pass away. So it's a whole event and energies and emotions are running high. So I can definitely imagine that there would be things taking place after the person has passed away. Like I said, go ahead. Tell me, do you want to speak about it?
Yes, because we did. I didn't even really realize it because she was only in it for such a short time. But my grandma was in hospice and we got to stay with her. She wasn't awake or anything, but I got to stay with her the night before she passed away. And even the week before she passed or was put into hospice, she had been in the hospital and she had told me and my mom the day that we went to go pick her up, when they released her to just be brought back like 2 days later. But the day that we were picking her up, we were sitting there like waiting for the doctor to come discharge her. And she said that she had had a dream about one of her cousins or something, or one of her friends that had died. And me being the fucking idiot that I am was like, whoa, did you know that if you dream about, or if you see, I was like, if you see someone that has died, like if you start hallucinating, like you said, like that's whenever it's going to get bad. I was like, but you dreamt about it, so it's okay. Like it's not, you weren't seeing it while you were awake. And she was like, I don't know, it was weird. But now that I think about it, I'm like, oh, maybe it does happen if you dream it too. I don't know.
Kind of reconnect to the other side or something.
Yes.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
And they said she could probably still hear us and stuff, but that night that she passed, or no, the night that we stayed with her was my grandpa's birthday. It was that day was my grandpa's birthday. So the following morning, me and my cousin left and we said goodbye to her or whatever. So we switched out with my aunt and my grandpa because we wanted someone with her the whole time. So we switched out with my aunt, my grandpa. My mom was there for like a millisecond. And then as soon as my grandpa sat down, which was the day after his birthday, she passed away. Like literally as soon as he sat down in front of her, she passed away.
Oh,
isn't that crazy? Like
that is so crazy, the timing and everything.
Yes. I was like, and I had told her the night before, like whenever we were staying with her, I was like, obviously she wasn't talking back, but I was like, okay, it was like midnight because we stayed up for most of the night. Like we couldn't sleep. I was afraid to fall asleep, but I was like, okay, it's not grandpa's birthday anymore. Like, you can go if you're ready. But she had business to take care of still. She's like, I see my man before I go.
Right. One more time.
Yeah.
Aw.
Yeah.
Well, happy Mother's Day to her, because it's on Sunday. It's Mother's Day.
It sure is.
I've been wanting to cover like hospice stories for a while now, but I just never really knew the approach. But today I just felt like it was time to see.
Yeah, I feel like it's a good
What they say about it. Respectfully, of course. I haven't read these stories, so if I cry or something weird, forgive me. I'm menstruating. Word.
Yeah, we're both going to be fucking bawling.
Oh, yeah. Not me crying with strangers at Steel Magnolias at the Cinemark last night. Like, I went by myself. I was like, okay, this is going to be fine. And I knew I was going to cry, like, for sure by the end I was going to cry. But I was crying from the beginning.
Oh, like, the whole
movie from the wedding and everything. It's just such a good movie. But other ladies were giggling and sniffling along with me, so it was fine. So what a good time.
What a nice experience.
A bonding moment between women at the movie theater.
Yes.
But anyways, so yeah, I'm going to read some of these stories. And like I said, I didn't really know too much about death. I haven't been around it too much, so I'm not familiar with what goes on. But I do know that if it's hospice, their goal is mostly just to keep them comfortable and out of pain. So it's no longer like the same thing as being at the hospital per se, but they just try to make you comfortable. And some people can even come stay at your house and like have a nurse at your home. Some people can do that. So it's different things. But anyway, so I was reading about it and I found out that end of life hallucinations are when they may hear voices that you cannot hear, see things that you cannot see, or feel things that you cannot or are unable to touch or feel. These hallucinations may be frightening or comforting to the dying person, depending on their content. So their like mind, their frame of mind, I guess, is a big thing in this case, because if they're hallucinating something that makes them feel guilty about something, or it can bring them comfort. So that is very interesting. I don't know. I always get iffy about that kind of stuff, because I'm like, are they seeing people from the other side because they're coming to get them, or is this the hallucination thing that their brain is doing? Like,
right.
It's very interesting to not really know the truth. But let me see. So I saw on Quora that they did a little, I don't ever really look at Quora, but there's a couple here that I was looking at, and it says, I'm not a hospice worker per se. This is Laura Zweigart. But I've worked in assisted living and memory care homes with residents on hospice. I remember my first job caregiving was in an old and very small facility in a small town. It was the oldest building in town and used to be a house. There was a woman on hospice who I was feeding dinner one night. She was completely bedridden. After I fed her dinner, she asked me if the little girl behind me had eaten dinner.
Caught
me off guard, and not knowing what to say, I told her that the girl had eaten. The next morning, I came in and again taking care of her. At one point, I stood up and walked across the room to get something. I turned around just a moment later, and all of the low to the ground drawers of her dresser and the entertainment center were suddenly open. The resident passed away shortly thereafter, and a coworker had later found an old photo of the family that had lived there when it was a house, and pictured in it was a little girl. I never found out what happened to that family in the picture, but it always creeped me out a bit from then on out.
That is terrifying.
Well, she played
That's
it cool.
That's what I was afraid of. Like, I was...
freak out.
Yes, we were...
No panic.
We were in the hospice wing. So in my head, I'm like, what if someone else has died? Like, obviously, people are dying here. And what if we see a ghost?
That too, but like the idea of like them being scared to die makes me sad too.
Yes, I would be terrified. So,
like, I wouldn't want to accidentally freak anyone out, because like there's nothing they can do about, like, it's gonna happen. So it's like, I don't want to let's not be scared, let's be calm and peaceful.
That's what death doulas do.
Oh yeah, just to kind of ease.
Yes, they make it like super calm fucking environment for not only the patient but the family. Would have to.
That's
have
beautiful. That is, they are very strong to hold it all together like that, yeah, and make it very beautiful for the, yes, family.
Yeah.
Ooh. Because they asked, the question on Quora was like, do hospice nurses see things? And so this Leanne Girlman says, some do and some don't. I think it's probably the same percentage as the general population. I have seen spirits down a hallway, never close by, and I always wondered why I saw them far away. And I realized it's because if they popped in close by, it would scare the bejesus out of me. Maybe the ghosts also, they get scared themselves. So they're like, oh, let me ease on in.
Yeah. Too much energy that she's given off there.
I had one CNA working for me, and when she did cares on this elderly gentleman, she felt like somebody was watching her. I told her that perhaps it was this gentleman's wife or mother watching over him. She liked that idea, and from then on, she would mention his wife or mother in her conversation in the room, and she didn't feel watched anymore. I have seen the lights of heaven shine down on the bed of a person dying. She held her hand out and told me her husband was there. She closed her eyes and the light went out. My supervisor came in a few minutes later and said, oh, she's not gone yet. She was still breathing. And I said, oh, no, she's gone. The supervisor smiled and asked me if I had seen her leave. Yes, I did. Thinking that I might be hallucinating instead of the patient, let the nurse hallucinate, LOL. I told her roommate that she was gone, and the roommate asked me, but why did you turn on all those lights when she died?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So they did see those lights there. I guess there were lights at that time.
I could not.
That's the other thing that freaks me out, too, is group hallucinations. Or what is that? Mass hallucination. Like, we can all see the same thing, but it's not there. Like, stop. Who can you trust? Is that
such a thing?
Yes, it is. Kind of like how mass hysteria is a thing.
Oh,
like,
I guess that is true. Okay, well.
It builds on itself, and if people are agreeing with you, you're like, oh, yeah, then I am seeing that or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay. Susan Morse said, I have been a social worker for hospice for 16 years. I have not seen ghosts, but I have had the experience of being with patients who tell me about deceased family or friends visiting them. They were not frightened. The patients who described having visitors generally were comforted by the visits. They were not taking medication that can cause hallucinations. One gentleman asked his son why his sister-in-law was visiting them. She lived across the country. He was adamant about seeing her standing by his bed the night before. His son was unsettled as the woman had died 2 weeks before. The family did not tell this patient about her death for fear of upsetting him, but he said he enjoyed her visit. One gentleman, who was a rocket scientist in the 1940s, was an atheist, a logical thinker type who was quite astonished by three young girls who kept coming around. I find it comforting. I also think the experience is very common, but people don't talk about it for fear of that they would look crazy. But when I show interest and listen, they have talked to me about it. I hope I have visits from deceased loved ones when I'm starting the phase of actively dying. Active dying may go on for days. I've noticed the visits seem to happen around the active dying process. Something is definitely happening.
Active dying. Interesting.
It's when the lines blur between the worlds. Mm-hmm.
That's fucking scary. That's what I was waiting to happen. That's why I was like, I'm bringing my laptop and we're going to watch Disney movies galore, because I'm not about to be fucking terrified.
Right.
My cousin fell asleep and I was like, you bitch, you left me here.
You left me awake.
Yeah. It was terrible. Well, dang. It wasn't terrible, but it was a little
a struggle for you. Yeah.
Yes.
Luisa Velare, it looks like that's what her name is. She says, I worked at a nursing home about 8 years ago. I came in for my shift and I was informed during report that a resident on hospice care would most likely be passing away during my shift. I was not on her floor, but the floor across from hers. There were two other girls who would be working with her that were both newly hired. I was told the resident was afraid of dying and did not want to be alone. She had expressed this extensively to the staff. Her son had been with her all day, but that evening he went to get some dinner. During his absence, I saw one of the new girls running up the hall in distress. "Something is wrong with MJ," she said, speaking of the resident. I replied in my most calm manner to explain what was going on as I followed her to MJ's room. "She isn't responding and her head is tipped to the side. She's got something coming out of her mouth," she exclaimed. Sure enough, MJ was sitting upright, her head cocked to one side, her chest rose and fell laboriously like a fish out of water. I went and stood beside her, cradling her head next to mine. I wrapped my arms around her. Both girls were scared and speaking loudly. "She's dying," they exclaimed. I shushed them and said everything was going to be all right. I asked them to get some supplies so we could get MJ comfortable, mostly to just get them out of the room. I knew I had to be the rock, the one to call up order in the chaos. I knew MJ was close to drawing her last breath, and I knew she was terrified of being alone. I held her in my arms and I sang to her softly. I told her that everything would be all right. I said it over and over again until I no longer could feel her chest rise and fall. It was just MJ and I in that room, and now I was alone with a vessel that had once held her spirit. When the girls returned with clean linens, we carefully changed MJ, and the three of us worked together to lift her into her bed. I remember the odd feeling of holding her lifeless body, her slack limbs, and how the muscle no longer supported any of her joints. I felt I could not allow her head to fall backward, that even in death, it was vital to keep her supported. Her son had returned and was waiting outside of the room. I knew I had to prepare her perfectly. The memory of her of seeing your dead loved one is a core memory you will never forget. So no one ever wants to see their loved one's dead, lifeless body. That is never, ever anything anyone would want to experience. I had to ensure that this tender moment was portrayed with as much dignity as possible. I combed her hair, pulled the sheets up, made sure there weren't any wrinkles in the bedding. I rested her hands on her chest and used a damp washcloth to close her eyes. When I was sure MJ looked as peaceful as possible, I opened the door and allowed him to begin his grieving process. I have never held someone as they transitioned from one life to the next. As sad as it was, I am so glad that I could be there with her, that I could comfort her, help her let go, and know that she was being cared for. I felt a deep welling in my own heart that I had done something good. I had shared with someone something that no other person was able to do in that moment. I held her while she died. I went to bed that night with a feeling of peace. At some point, I began to dream, and I want to say it was early morning when I felt the presence. The vision in my dream was a chamber of light, gold flecks, and taking on no shape recognizable. I knew it was her. I could feel her warmth and light, happiness like laughter. Her presence stood beside the head of my bed as she had been there all along, but now I could see her golden aura. In my dreams, I heard her feminine voice. She said thank you and slowly faded away. I could feel her spirit ascend this earth, and I knew in my heart that MJ had made a point to tell me what I did had truly comforted her. Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah.
How beautiful. And yeah, those other two nurses that were freaking out, it was a freaking donkey on Trek moment, not to make it make light of it. Blue flower, red thorns, now get out. I don't see ghosts, but sometimes sense presences in the room, I presume of those who are guiding the person home. And I've had a few occasions when I've felt someone's soul leave their body despite the fact that they were still breathing and their hearts were still beating. Interesting.
What?
Mm-hmm. I've wondered that, like if someone can be alive but like have no soul, like, ooh.
Oh, well, I guess, yeah, that is true. Or that
it's like opinion. A whole separate I think that's how I feel, like the whole biology part of it is its separate thing from the soul, like the spirit or whatever.
Yeah. Interesting.
So the originally asked question for this one was, do hospice workers experience any paranormal events? Patsy Quitkin says, yes, miracles all the time. No atheist in hospice. Whatever you believe in, higher power and person dying in control. Person dying will know when loved one is at bedside. Will die when they are not there. Have experienced this personally 3 times. Plus loved one will give you a gift if they can, like tell you they love you, then die. It is truly amazing. Higher power and person dying have control all in life's plans. Remember, life force is an energy form. Energy cannot be destroyed. It just changes forms. That's what I think too.
Yeah, I agree.
Morticians. Ooh, morticians probably have their stories too, because.
Oh yeah, that's fucking terrifying though.
Because that's like way after they've passed away, like on paper, but at the same time, it's like not really. Like there's got to be something lingering for a couple weeks at least before completing the cycle. I don't know. All right. Well, away from Quora we go. I found a website, Ebombs World, where they have collected stories from Reddit for me, because that's what I was doing at first, was looking through Reddit, and there were so many, and I was going to have to save all of them, but then I found this. So, ghost stories told by those who work around death. This was published February of last year. Back when I worked in cardiology, we had this one single room at the ass end of the floor. We'd put palliative patients or patients that needed isolation in there. I swear, three different patients in the years I worked there told me they had woken in the middle of the night and seen an old man and a little girl holding hands, both standing at the foot of the bed doing nothing.
No, thank you.
I used to work in a nursing home. The residents in certain rooms would complain about a man in their room at night, but hallucinations are common in the elderly, so it wasn't really noticed. One night, I was mopping the dining room, which had huge windows overlooking the garden. It was around 1 a.m., so pitch black outside and low lighting inside. I had this horrible feeling of being watched, so I looked up and reflected in the window was a man behind me.
No.
He had a brown suit on, a bowler hat, and the cruelest look on his face. He grinned, and his mouth was so big.
No.
This happened in seconds, and when I turned around, there was obviously no one there, but I'll never forget that look of evil on his face. I paid more attention to the residents after that, and they'd all seen the same man. He just enjoyed terrorizing people.
Oh, my fucking God. I would have been like,
that's mean.
Right now.
Being the kind of ghost that just likes scaring people.
I mean, when you ain't got nothing else to do.
Wow, what a little prankster. I used to be a security guard at a hospital. One night while doing my rounds, I went into the surgery wing and was walking down a hallway when I saw a doctor looking at the whiteboard where all the scheduled surgeries were written down. I said, "Hello, doctor," and kept going. The doctor didn't say anything back, just kept studying the whiteboard. When I got back to the security office, I was telling one of the guys that's been there for years about how I greeted this doctor and he didn't say anything back. I asked if that's the asshole they told me to watch out for. I was asked where I saw him and I said the surgery ward and he gave me a smirk. He then explained that the surgery ward closes at 9 p.m. and that all patients are moved into the monitoring wards. There should be no one there. He then asked me if this doctor was studying the schedule board. I said yes, and he then told me that I had just met Dr. Luisidi. Apparently, many years ago, one of the surgeons went up to the helipad and jumped off the building. Seems like he never stopped working, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Trapped. Okay. I used to be a nurse assistant on a cancer floor that also served as a hospice floor. The number of times a patient would pass and be removed from a room only to have that room's call light continue to go off without anyone inside was just nuts. And before you say maybe the light was just damaged or moved strangely in the process of removing the body, that's the only time it would happen. Broken call lights in any other circumstance just wouldn't come on at all. I am in ICURN. We had a septic patient in the unit. She was 29 weeks pregnant. She went into labor on my shift and we delivered her baby, stillborn. I did postmortem care on the baby, retrieved the proper transport container and walked the baby down to the morgue. It was the middle of the night. I'm in an elevator alone. I hear a baby start wailing.
No.
I absolutely lose my shit and rip open the cover, and just as I go to zip down the bag, I hear a calming male voice say, "Hush, little one, I've got you. No need to cry."
Oh my God! That would've...
The crying stopped immediately. Shaking, I opened the bag and saw exactly what I expected to see, a deceased 29-week-old baby. I am a big bearded 40-year-old ICU nurse, and that was the scariest shit I have ever experienced. No one believes me to this day. I don't even want to speculate what the crying or the voice was.
Oh my God, that is so fucking scary.
Because you're by yourself and you know, like, and the idea of, like, maybe it's still alive. Like, oh, my God.
And yeah, I would have been like, holy shit, it's alive.
Oh,
oh my God.
That would have been my first thing. Yeah. That hopefulness or whatever. Yes. Okay.
Oh, my God. Got it.
Wow. Mm-mm. I used to be a driver for a funeral home corporation. Like, drive the hearse and pick up the bodies. Never had anything creepy happen. A few funny things, a few traumatic things. In general, it was a chill job. However, I did get incredibly uncomfortable one night picking up a man who died at home. He still had the defibrillator leads on his chest, and his eyes were closed, which is unusual because the eyes always open. He just looked like he was asleep or unconscious, not rigid or pale or anything. I just had this sinking feeling for about half an hour in traffic that he was going to suddenly gasp and wake up in the body bag. Then it hit me. That would be the coolest thing ever. I'd just take him home and he'd be back with his family. So I just kind of drove slowly and turned up some music and sang along and talked to him. When I got him to the funeral home, I left him out of the cooler for about an hour while I did paperwork and played on my phone. When I got another call, I checked on him and his limbs had started to stiffen. I was kind of bummed. I put him in the cooler and went on to my next call.
What the fuck?
So he was just hoping. Oh, during my apprenticeship. Oh, no, that's somebody else's. Man, that would have been interesting if he did wake up.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. That has happened before.
I've heard stories of it happening too, yeah.
Where they're at the wake and then they start waking up. Oh my God. Okay. Mm-mm. During my apprenticeship, I worked at a funeral home said to be haunted by an old funeral director assistant who had a heart attack in the building and died. All he ever did was mess with the chapel lights, and if you called him out, something like, John, the family is coming, please don't, they would return to normal. Yeah. Not really sure if I believe it was really haunted, but saying something always fixed the issue, so I kept doing it my entire time there.
That's funny. John, the family's coming, no.
Yeah, let's calm down. I worked within hospice and long-term care. The spookiest phenomenon was the man in the corner. It happens all the time for people actively dying. They see a shadowy man in the corner of their room.
No.
Mm-hmm. I have a million that there are more grotesque and gory than this one, but it stands out to me. I was once working at a mortuary and had to go pick up a man from the medical examiner's office. When you do that, at least where I'm from, you get a receipt when they release the body to you. The receipt has all of the personal belongings that are with the deceased. When I brought the man back to the office, I opened up the body bag to make sure all of the belongings were there and double-checking the receipt. When I opened the bag, I was stunned to find this dude looked almost exactly like me. He was my age, had similar tattoos in similar spots, and had the same long hair I do. Even had the same style of jewelry I was wearing. It took me so off guard that I stood there in an existential crisis until the embalmer came in and was like, hey, how's it going? Holy shit, that guy looks just like you. It's the only case I've had nightmares about. I'll be the one in the body bag with the deceased man opening me up.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that one's interesting. Before my time in palliative care, I worked on a medicine unit at the hospital. One night, I was returning from my second break around 3 a.m. or so and saw a man standing in the door of my patient's room. He was white, late 40s to mid 50s, dark hair, which was graying, relatively fit, wearing a hospital gown. He was standing at the door with his arms crossed, and as I walked closer, he turned and went inside the room. I followed because I knew it wasn't his room. Our unit was big, 36 beds, so it was entirely possible he was a patient I had just not met yet. Anyway, you can guess the rest. I went inside the room, and he was nowhere to be found. I looked under the beds, ridiculous because someone couldn't hide there. In the lockers, the washroom, behind the curtains, he was nowhere to be found. Later that night, my coworker had said she felt like someone was touching her feet when she tried to nap on her break.
Oh my fucking God. Oh my God. I don't know how you're going to sleep tonight, Abby. Me either, actually. Shit. Not that Jeremy's much help. I'd be
the like break room
terrified thinking about it all night long, and he's just snoring away.
Yeah, peacefully.
And then he starts to snore scarily, and I'm like, oh my God, is something happening?
Yes. Like, are you dreaming? What are you seeing?
Yes. And then I get even more scared. It's terrible.
Mm-mm. The break room was right next door to my patient's room, and she was in there at the time I saw this patient. So yeah, she was definitely touched by that man.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I work in a cardiac ICU. We have quite a lot of death around here. That being said, we had one patient that comes to mind. I'll call him Greg. Greg was on the unit for months. He fought very hard to stay alive every day, and was, to his credit, he was getting better for a good space of time. Greg was fairly old, late 70s or early 80s. The thing is, he initially looked very young and acted very hip. He became a meme around the unit, and everyone loved him because he was an old white dude who loved rap, Tupac and Biggie, and would throw gang signs sarcastically as a nonverbal cue that he was feeling okay. He had a trach in, so he couldn't talk. He also had his family bring mood lights in his room that synced with his music. I kid you not, his room was playing rap in rave mode sometimes. We called him DJ Greggy G, and he loved it. Unfortunately, he took a turn for the worse. His condition deteriorated rapidly, and ultimately he died. We were devastated as a unit. His family let us keep his mood lights, and to this day, we keep them plugged in at the nurse's station. However, one day, the mood lights turned off. We were saddened. Nobody could get them working, but then they turned on. We were happy, and then they started flashing super irrationally. Then we heard the patient that was in Greg's room start screaming. We went in to check on her. She was confused. She was an old lady who would say some pretty wild things, but this one was weird. She said that she was watching the flashing lights in the hall because she could see them from her room. Then she said that she saw a silhouette of a man casted into the wall from the lights. And then she started yelling, "Tell Greg to leave. It's not his room anymore. Tell Greg to go." There is no way she knew it was Greg's room. And with her memory being the way it is, there's also no way she would remember even if she got to, if she did get told. Kind of spooky.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Mom told me stories when I was growing up. Her first job out of nursing school was in RN in the ER of an old hospital in Virginia in the mid-1980s. There was the man in the hat and patient one. Most of the nurses had stories about them. The man in the hat would show up and stand outside of rooms after visiting hours. Mm-mm. The patients often died soon after.
No.
Patient one was a woman in a very old hospital gown. She'd walk in the halls before entering random rooms. Those patients usually coded. They took the man to be an omen of death and the woman to be a heads up to grab the crash cart.
Jeez.
Honestly, the only creepy thing that happened when I worked in the morgue is that one of the staff killed himself in there, and I just can't imagine wanting to die in this cold gray place surrounded by corpses. Back when I worked in cardiology, we had this one single room at the ass end of the floor. Oh, okay, yeah, that's the one I read at the very beginning. Just relisted it. Next one. Once upon a time, I was doing home hospice, and a younger guy in his 50s was dying of occupation-related lung cancer. Anyway, I knew it was coming and asked his family if they wanted to invite anybody to say goodbye, so patient's 90-year-old father, brother, extended family, and friends came over at about 1 a.m. and left, and I left them and sat in the kitchen to give them privacy. As I'm in there, I hear this massive burst of wind chimes, which was kind of supernatural, as it did not stop, just a massive burst that went on and on instead of trickling here and there with the wind. A moment later, his daughter came in to tell me he had passed away.
Wow.
I don't usually share my supernatural beliefs about death or dying with families, but I couldn't help but comment on the wind chimes later on, and his wife said, yeah, he collected wind chimes. That doesn't surprise me at all. And turned on the light on the back patio, showing me literally hundreds of chimes, which had been silent all night until he passed.
Oh,
that is really eerie that you don't see any of those. So when you hear it, you're like, I didn't see any of those wind chimes. And then you turn the light on, there's a bunch of them.
Oh yeah, that's terrifying.
That would be creepy. I actually worked at this moving company. We had to clear out this old decommissioned hospital. The new hospital was being built right next to it. Our job was to move stuff like tables, desks, waiting room, chairs, etc. to the new one. At one point, we were looking for more rooms to clear and stuff to pick up, but when we came across the mortuary of the hospital. It's not like we saw ghosts or anything, but there's just something very off-putting about seeing an examination table as a regular Joe in a quiet, abandoned hospital. There's just an eerie vibe that crawls over you and you realize that so many dead bodies have been in that very room. Mm-mm. And that's the end of that one. Mm-mm.
Woo! You sounded very excited.
Gosh, well, that's like hospice. Like, I just, it's a lot.
Hell yeah.
And the nurses, I don't know if like they would even tell the family, because obviously the family's grieving. Yeah. I don't know when there would be a good time for them to be like, oh, so I saw your grandpa or whatever your aunt.
I don't think that's something you want to.
They just don't do it.
I would, but.
Unless there's like something specific that they did that they can ask them, because then maybe it's like a cute thing, just like the wind chimes with that one guy.
Yes.
So because I knew this would be done early, I have a terrifying creepypasta that I'm going to read.
Oh, good, good.
And it's going to remind you of a Japanese urban legend that we covered a long time ago.
Let me shut my closet door first. Hold on. Damn it. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on.
Perfect.
Okay, if it's the one I'm thinking about, I'm gonna have to make sure all my drawers were closed. Okay.
All right. I'm on r/no sleep.
Oh man, I am not prepared.
My wife has been peeking at me from around corners and behind furniture. It's gone from weird to terrifying.
God damn it, Abby. Oh my God.
My wife, Lynn, and I have been together for 6 years and married for 11 months. Our entire history together has been very normal, and never once have I noticed anything weird or weird behaviors or red flags. I can't stress enough how out of character this whole thing is for her. Lynn is very kind, intelligent, and thoughtful. She's always been the no-nonsense type of person. Being childish or trying to scare me is not something she'd normally do. She doesn't even like watching horror movies. When we first started dating, she agreed to watch The Shining with me because she knew how much I loved horror. She was so scared that she didn't even make it through half of the movie before we had to turn it off. She isn't into anything creepy and has never been into pranks. It's just not her cup of tea. That's fine, but that's what's so strange about this. It's just so unlike her. I should also add that she has never had any mental health issues, and as far as I'm aware, it doesn't run in her family. I know some people are able to hide their mental health problems, but in the 6 years we've been together, I think I'd have seen some sort of sign. 2 months ago, I was in the kitchen making myself some coffee before work. I was running a bit late that morning, and I knew I wouldn't be able to make it to Dunkin' Donuts for my usual morning fix. I took a sip of my coffee as I hurried down the hall towards the front door when I happened to notice Lynn peeking at me from around the corner ahead of me. Oh, I could only see her. being in a hurry and then being like, hello, like what the? Okay. I could only see her eyes and a strand of her long hair hanging against the wall. The rest of her body was concealed behind the corner. I nearly spilled my coffee when I saw her. I did burn the shit out of my lips. "Geez, Lynn," I said, wiping a few drops of coffee off from my pants. "You scared the shit out of me." She immediately popped out of view like a little kid that had been caught. I heard her scurry off towards the living room, and by the time I got to the front door, she was out of sight. Mm-mm. It was really weird and just totally out of character for her, like I said, but I also found it kind of funny that she was being more playful and less serious. I shouted that I loved her and called her a weirdo. As I shut the door behind me, I heard her laughing.
Oh my God.
Her behavior was a bit odd, but it certainly wasn't something I could call it priest over. I forgot about it by lunch, and by the time I got home, she was her normal self. I didn't bring it up either, and neither did she, and life went on. The next incident happened 3 days later. It was around 2 a.m., and I had woken up to get a drink. I was standing at the kitchen island, jug of OJ in hand, when I felt a strong feeling that I was being watched.
Oh my God.
For whatever reason, I looked down at the floor and saw my wife's smiling face staring back.
What the absolute fuck? What the fuck?
She was peeking at me from the other side of the island, staring at me with wide, unblinking eyes and grinning, grinning like a Cheshire cat.
No, 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 no. I just pictured
Jennifer's body. I screamed. Oh, yeah, that is how she does that.
I think Pepper's like staring at me right now.
I screamed, I'll admit it, not out of irritation, but a fear. For some reason, at that moment, I was scared. At the sound of my scream, Lynn scuttled backwards out of my view, her hands and feet smacking the tile floor as she hurried out of the kitchen on all fours.
What the absolute fuck?
I didn't run after her or even yell after her. I just stood there frozen in shock, wondering what the fuck had possessed her to do that. It took me a little longer than I'd like to admit to go back upstairs, but I eventually did. When I got to our bedroom, Lynn was lying on her side asleep, or at least pretending to be. I stood there for a while, watching her breathing to be sure she was really asleep. I had the feeling she might jump out at me the moment I got into bed, but she didn't. I climbed into bed and she didn't even move. Her breathing was soft and deep, and I was starting to wonder if I'd dreamt the whole thing. The next morning, I waited for her to come down for coffee, and after handing her a mug and kissing her cheek, I decided to ask her about it. What was that about last night? I asked, keeping my tone light so I didn't offend or embarrass her. She frowned over her cup of coffee, shaking her head like she had no clue what I was referring to. You were peeking at me again from over there, I said, pointing to the spot on the floor by the kitchen island. She followed my gaze, and when she looked back at me, she burst out laughing. She laughed so hard I couldn't help but join her. You creep me the fuck out sometimes, you know that? I said. She giggled and set her cup on the counter and wrapped her arms around my neck. You creep me out all the time, so I guess we're even, she teased. We said our goodbyes and left for work. As I drove, I kept thinking about how creepy it had been seeing her grinning at me from behind the island like that. The sounds her hands made on the floor as she crawled away. I told myself she was just trying to be silly. She's just trying to join me in my love of all things horror. It's not like I was afraid of her, but it still didn't sit right with me. I started seeing her peeking at me more and more. Sometimes she'd be peeking out from behind the couch or living room curtains. Once she even managed to get inside her grandmother's old trunk that sits at the foot of our bed.
As I stare at my trunk that's at the foot of my bed. That's nice.
It's not ajar, hopefully. Nice. I might not have even known she was there at all had the trunk's old hinges not given her away. Ew!
No.
Nope. Okay.
No, ma'am.
She had the lid propped up just enough so that only half of her face peeked through. She'd been grinning like an excited toddler. It was unnerving. I didn't even know what to say to her. All I could do was stare. When I finally found my voice, I asked her why on earth she was doing this. She didn't answer, but she had slowly closed the lid, shutting herself inside the trunk. I just walked away, feeling disturbed. He just left her in there.
No.
Shit, close it and put a freaking lock.
Absolutely.
I didn't understand why she was doing it, but it clearly made her happy. I just hoped she would tire of the game quickly. Lynn didn't peek at me for the next 2 weeks. I started to think she was done with her weird prank, and I was relieved. We were watching a show on Netflix one night, and I jokingly said that I hadn't seen her peeking at me lately and that she must have given up on her spy game. She looked up at me with a small smile and said, maybe I've just gotten better at it.
No. Was that the end?
I didn't know.
Oh,
that would be a creepy ending, though.
Abby, oh my god.
I know. I'll be awake, so you can just text me if you're afraid.
Great.
I didn't say anything, but I wondered whether or not she was joking. For the next few days, I couldn't stop thinking about what she'd said. Was she still peeking at me when I wasn't looking and I just hadn't noticed? And if so, what the hell was she getting out of this? I started to feel paranoid, constantly checking whether she was watching from around the corner or behind a door. I was jumpy whenever I was home and she wasn't in full view of me. I felt stupid and a little crazy. But after a few weeks without another incident, I began to relax. I stopped checking behind the furniture and walls and told myself it was just a bad memory. Then a few days ago, things got much worse. Lynn left to go to a friend's, and I lounged on the couch and played a couple games on my laptop. Around 9 p.m., I hopped in the shower, and as I was washing the soap from my hair, I felt that awful feeling that I was being watched.
I slowly hate you right now. God damn it. God damn it.
I slowly opened my eyes and almost had a fucking heart attack.
Nope.
Lynn was peeking from behind the shower curtain, her entire head stretched into the shower, leaving just her body outside. Her long dark hair hung against the curtain, the ends dripping with water. Her mouth hung open in a terrible grin, eyes wide and red as if she hadn't blinked in a while. I screamed and jumped back against the wall. She didn't move, nor did her smile waver. Her makeup ran down her cheeks in two black streaks. She looked giddy and completely deranged. I was fucking terrified.
No.
We stood like that for a few moments, neither of us saying a word. Finally, after what felt like forever, she slowly pulled her head back out of the shower, and I watched her blurry figure through the curtain as she moved backwards towards the bathroom door.
What the fuck?
The backwards movement is just like, can you not? Like, it's enough. Like,
yeah, no.
It's more than enough.
Everyone know that's listening. If you see me in person then in the next week and I stink, it's because I cannot bring myself to take a shower for this very reason.
Don't ever close your eyes when you're in the shower. Hello. God
damn it.
Okay. So she scurried out the door, and now a second later, the bathroom door slammed shut, hard enough to rattle the mirror. I screamed again and jumped out of the shower to lock the door. I stayed inside the bathroom for over an hour. Maybe I overreacted to some of you, but joke or not, I wasn't going to put up with the crazy shit anymore. That's what I kept telling myself as I paced in my bathroom, stopping to listen at the door every few minutes. Suddenly, I heard a muffled sound, and I pressed my ear against the bathroom door, straining to listen. I couldn't hear anything, but I envisioned Lynn standing on the other side of the door, giggling at her joke. I felt a surge of anger. I was beyond pissed at being made to feel scared in my own house and made to hide in the bathroom for an hour. All for what? Some joke? If it was a joke, it was an awful one. What the fuck, Lynn? I snapped. This shit is getting really fucking annoying. I waited for her to apologize or call me a jerk, but instead I heard a faint moan, so quiet I wondered if I heard it at all, and then complete silence. Lynn, I called out, not able to even hide the shakiness in my voice. I got no response, just my own heavy breathing. I swear to God, just fucking stop it, I yelled, pounding my fist on the door. I waited for her to cuss me out, something I would expect from me talking to her like that. I never screamed at her before. But there was nothing, just the occasional drip from the showerhead. I won't deny that I was scared, too afraid to open the damn door and face my own wife. I waited another 30 minutes or so, which feels like a fucking lifetime when you're scared. Finally, I decided I wasn't going to spend the night hiding in my bathroom, so I got down on my knees and I peered under the door. I can't read. He peered under the door. I can't. I don't want to know. It's over, guys.
Yeah, I fucking took my earphones out about 5 seconds ago because I was like, I can't do this.
You were trying to hear
me. Nope, so. I was not. I was like, I'm just going to keep putting them back in when to see where she's at. But
wow, you're a cheater. You're leaving all of us being scared by ourselves.
Hell yeah, I am the biggest fucking chicken next to my brother.
Fine. Okay. Finally. Okay, so. So I got down on my knees and I peered under the door. I almost expected to see her face peeking back at me, but thankfully I didn't. I could see straight down the hallway to the top of the stairs, but no Lynn. I didn't know if I should be happy about that or not. I looked for a few minutes waiting to see her head pop up over the top step, but it never came. I stood up, my hand hovering over the door, and mentally prepared myself to open it. I slowly turned the lock with shaky fingers and was about to yank it open when I heard a sound that still makes me feel nauseous when I think about it.
No.
A moan, louder than before, but this time I was able to tell just where it was coming from. I turned my head to the closet door as if in slow motion.
I fucking knew it. I am so glad that I closed that fucking door. Holy shit.
And I locked eyes with my wife, who was peeking out at the peeking out at me from the slight gap Guys!
No.
Please, I can't even read. They're like, bitch, you could never read, but... This is making me sweaty.
Yeah, it's too much. Too much.
Okay, here we go. Oh, so,
yeah, my pizza's on its way. I'm so glad that I checked, because if I would have heard the dog say your shit, I would have died. I would have pissed my pants. Yep.
You're going to be like, can you stay a bit to the back?
Excuse me, sir. But can you come sit with me?
Spend some time. Have a slice. Okay. Here we go. A moan louder than before, but this time I was able to tell just where it was coming from. I turned my head to the closet door as if in slow motion and locked eyes with my wife, who was peeking out at me from the slight gap. Her eyes were still wide as ever, and her mouth was hanging open in the most grotesque, gaping smile I'd ever seen. I didn't even scream. I was too scared for even that. Her hands were clasped to her chest, body trembling with sheer delight as if she could barely contain her excitement.
Oh, no! There they go. Hold on. Pause. Pause.
Oh, my God. Bag secured.
Dude, I let the dogs out so that I could get the pizza, right? And I left that door open a little bit, like I didn't close it all the way. So, of course, a gust of wind comes, and I just hear it creak open, and I'm like, no!
No, no. Just keep the TV on. That's my biggest.
Yeah, everything's going to – all the lights are going to be on, all the shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't take any advice from me, because I watch The Strangers. That's what's on the TV whenever the TV's on. I listen to creepypastas, falling asleep.
You are insane.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, these bastards. They're outside.
Oh, here we go again. Okay, so we've left off with her with delight and excitement, which is the scariest part of this whole thing. Somehow I found the ability to pull the bathroom door open and ran as fast as I could all the way down the steps, snagging my keys and phone from the table in the living room before running outside to my car. I could hear her shrill laughter behind me, but I didn't hear her getting closer. I didn't bother shutting the front door. I drove away from the house faster than I legally should have, shivering the entire time, either from fear or from the cold. Maybe a little of both. I hadn't grabbed a coat or even a pair of shoes. I was still in my boxers and my hair was still damp. I drove straight to my brother Chris's house about 40 minutes away, ignoring any and every call and text I got. I didn't check my phone until I was safely parked in my brother's driveway. Lynn had called 4 times and sent a flurry of texts, all wondering where I'd gone and why I left like that. I threw my phone at the dash in a rage, furious at her nonchalant attitude. My brother and his wife were surprised to see me, especially dressed in just a pair of boxers, but told me to stay as long as I needed. Chris lent me some clothes and asked me what happened. I told him Lynn and I had a fight, but didn't get into the details. I didn't want him to think I was overreacting, leaving my wife over a prank, even if it was a strange one. I mean, hadn't I encouraged her for years to lighten up instead of being so serious all the time? I wanted her to relax and loosen up, but this is definitely not what I had in mind. I tried to sleep on their sofa, but my brain wouldn't let me sleep. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw Lynn's face staring at me from inside the closet. Knowing she'd been in there with me the entire time made my skin crawl. She'd never left the fucking bathroom at all. Instead, she slipped inside the closet and slammed the bathroom door to fool me. The mere thought of going back home gave me anxiety. I tossed and turned, unable to sleep. Chris ended up giving me a sleeping pill so I was able to get a little rest. My sleep was filled with terrible dreams, all of Lynn's smiling face. I woke up just as the sun started to rise. My sore body ached from the sofa and I felt drained. I knew I'd have to call Lynn at some point, but I didn't know what to say to her. I wouldn't be going home unless she gave me her word she'd never do any more creepy shit. I just wanted my wife back. Her normal, serious self never looked so good to me. I was contemplating calling her and telling her that when that familiar feeling came over me, I was being watched. I was staring at the ceiling, my heart in my throat. I didn't want to look away, but the longer I ignored the feeling, the worse it got. My eyes drifted away from the ceiling, almost on their own. Her face was pressed up against the window beside the couch, staring at me with the same gaping smile. Drool dribbled down her lips, leaving two long streaks down the glass. I didn't know how long she'd been there, but something told me she'd been there a while, possibly all night. I didn't bother screaming, though I was afraid. Anger trumped any fear I felt in that moment, and I jumped up from the couch and pounded my palm against the glass. "Lynn, are you crazy? What the hell is wrong with you? Just go home," I shouted. "Now." She didn't move, and her ghastly expression never changed. If anything, her smile only grew, as if she had never been more elated. I could hear Chris and his wife moving around upstairs, as if Lynn could hear them from her place outside. Her head twitched slightly in their direction, and she began to close her mouth slowly. Chris called my name from upstairs, obviously concerned. I turned to see him and his wife, Rebecca, hurrying down the steps. When I turned back to the window, Lynn was gone. The only sign she'd been there at all were the two streaks of drool still dripping down the glass. I tried explaining to Chris and Rebecca about waking up to see Lynn watching me through their window. They were skeptical. Who wouldn't be? Chris and I went outside to the spot in front of the window, but there was no footprints in the dirt, only just a slight indent. Animal, probably, Chris guessed, and I didn't argue. He and Rebecca assumed I dreamt the entire episode, but they didn't understand. I was too tired to explain it to them. I called out of work the next day and turned my cell off. I didn't want to face Lynn. Just talking to her was too much for me at that point. I really started to believe something was irreversibly wrong with her, that no matter what promises she made, we'd never be the same again. The thought saddened me to my core. I cried most of the morning. By noon, I figured I was ready to confront her, give her one last chance to explain herself. I could at least give her that after 6 years, I told myself. I turned my phone on and saw the dozens of texts she'd sent, all from a seemingly concerned wife. "Can we talk? I love you. Please call me. I'm really worried. Can you answer? Just come home." And more of the same. All texts telling me she loved me and she wanted me home. How worried she was, not a damn one addressing the crazy shit she pulled. Like she hadn't just been acting like a character from a Stephen King book. Even her texts were different. She normally texted novels just like she'd tell me to pick up a loaf of bread. You'd think she'd have more to say to me after her bizarre shenanigans. I know it probably seems childish to some of you who are miles away from the situation, but if you saw the way Lynn looked at me, how she scampered away on all fours like some wild animal grinning at me from the inside of a closet like a lunatic, then I think you'd find my reaction was warranted. I ended up staying with Chris and Rebecca for another night. I didn't wake up yesterday until afternoon, and thankfully I didn't see Lynn's face watching me through the window. I don't want to pry because it's not my place, but is this fight something that can be mended? Rebecca asked. She'd made us both a sandwich for lunch, and I knew she wanted to breach the subject without seeming to be nosy. I don't know. She's like a different person, I said, choosing my words carefully. I still wasn't ready for her or Chris to know the full extent of the batshit craziness that I had been dealing with. People change, Ben. But she's still the same woman you married. Maybe you both just need to talk through your issues. Whatever's going on, I'm sure it can be fixed, she said. Ever the peacemaker. I think it's beyond that now. I don't think talking would help. I just don't trust her, I said. The words stung my heart. I missed and loved my wife, but how could I live with someone like that? Living in constant fear didn't sound too appealing. Lynn loves you. She has to be absolutely crushed, she said. I don't know about that, I said. Well, she certainly seemed like that to me. I've never seen her so upset, very much unlike Lynn, I know, Rebecca said, shaking her head sadly. It took a full minute for her words to really sink in when they did. I felt dread warming its way through my skin. Wait, what do you mean? You saw her? You saw Lynn? I asked, my mouth suddenly dry. Rebecca nodded casually as if that fact wasn't nightmare fuel. Maybe for her it wasn't. She stopped by this morning just after Chris left for work, she said, cleaning the plates from the table. I didn't see her car, though. Maybe she took an Uber or something. Beck, what did she say? Did she come inside? I asked, sweat starting to break out on my forehead. I began looking around, examining corners, though, as though a predator lurked behind them. No, she just asked if you were awake yet and said that I said that you weren't. I asked if she wanted me to wake you up, but she said no. She said to just let you sleep, she said as she washed the dishes. That's all? She didn't say anything else? I asked. No, she looked awful, though, like she hadn't slept in days. I think you should call her. I got up from the table and thanked Rebecca for lunch. I felt a little bit better at the knowledge that at least she hadn't come inside. Still, I needed to double-check the doors, that they were still locked. I sat for a while trying to figure out what to do next. I didn't want to go home, but I felt that I owed it to Lynn to help her if I could. Hadn't I sworn an oath to love and honor her through sickness and in health? Clearly she was very sick. If she was sick, which I truly believe she was, I had to try to get her help that she needed. But I didn't even know where to start. I didn't want to call the police. And besides, what the hell was I going to tell them? That my wife was peeking at me? That she was being creepy? As bizarre as she'd been, she still hadn't committed any crime. Not yet, anyway. The police would have probably said that I was overreacting, but this wasn't some prank. It felt wrong, dangerous even, like something sinister lurked beneath her smile. I knew as her husband I was well within my rights to have her committed, but what if she simply acted normal in their presence? She had obviously been able to fool Rebecca into thinking she was just a concerned wife. As long as the doctors didn't find her a danger to herself or others, they'd have no choice but to release her after 72 hours. I felt lost and overwhelmed. So I did what any husband in my position would do. I called her mother. I didn't want to, believe me. Her mother, Marianne, and I were never on the best of terms. We'd never fought or anything like that. She just wasn't a very warm person and wasn't really easy to get along with. She'd hardly ever smiled, and when she did, only her lips would move into a thin-lipped smile, leaving her eyes as blank as before. She gave off an aura that felt like she was permanently on the offensive. I'd only met her twice, and both times were for such short visits. I got the impression she didn't approve of me or her daughter. Lynn always ushered us out quickly as she didn't want me to feel uncomfortable, which I was grateful for. Being in her mother's company felt almost unbearable, like walking on glass. I was glad when we moved 3 states away, when we didn't have to see her often. I was happy to avoid the woman, but I needed her help. I really didn't want to talk to her at all, but I had to talk to someone, and someone who knew Lynn better than I did. So I grit my teeth and I did what I had to. "Yes," she answered, already sounding irritated. "Marianne, it's me, Ben. Do you have a minute to talk?" I asked. I could hear her cluck her tongue in irritation. "I'm in the middle of writing some checks, but if you insist, I suppose I can spare a moment." "What is it that you want to discuss, Benjamin?" she said coolly. "It's about Lynn. She's been acting strangely, and I was wondering if you had any idea whether there was something..." I was quickly interrupted. "It's a bit difficult to follow your rambling, Benjamin. What is it that you want from me?" she asked. I could almost see her standing there in her thin sweater and slacks, tapping her fingernails impatiently on the table. "I wanted to know if you'd ever noticed any odd behavior, or possibly any mental health issues," I asked.
"Pepper!
Little Pep."
She's freaking me out.
I asked. There was a long, uncomfortable pause that I couldn't tell was because she was just thinking or something else. Finally, after a few seconds, she spoke. "I'm not sure if this is one of your jokes, Benjamin, but if so, I don't find the humor in it. Now, I do have business to attend to, as I've said, so if you don't mind," she said, but I cut her off before she could get rid of me. "Marianne, it's not a joke. I'm sincerely concerned about Lynn's mental health. Her behavior has been very erratic lately. I'm very worried about her, and I figured as her mother you would be as well," I said, my frustration evident in my voice. "If you're truly concerned, then I suggest you get the health professionals involved. I don't know what you expect of me," she snapped. I could tell she was seconds away from hanging up, and for some reason I was desperate to not let her. I had the feeling that she knew a lot more than she was letting on. "Please, if not for me, do it for Lynn," I tried. I heard a faint, shaky intake of breath, as if she were trying to hold her steely persona together but failing. "Marianne, what's wrong?" I started. "Benjamin, I don't know what to tell you. My only advice would be to seek professional help. Do not call here again. Goodbye." I tried to call out to her, but she hung up. I tried to wrap my head around the call and her refusal to help me. Even if she didn't like me, why wouldn't she want to help her own daughter? I couldn't understand. I tried to replay the conversation, desperate to find something I missed. After a while, I almost gave up, until I remembered her last words to me, "Seek professional help." She'd said those words with a bit of urgency. I could have just been grasping at straws, but no, I was sure her voice had changed ever so slightly when she said that, as if they were very important. What had she meant? I assumed she'd been referring to medical professionals, but maybe she was referring to someone else, someone that she didn't, for some reason, feel comfortable saying directly, or maybe I was just desperate. I waited for Chris to get home, and after a very long and exhausting conversation with him and Rebecca, I convinced them that Lynn truly needed psychiatric help. I didn't tell them everything. I wasn't prepared to go into it yet. But I told them about our last encounter, how she'd hidden in the bathroom, peeking at me from the closet. They were obviously shocked, but thankfully, they believed me. They too just wanted help for her. Still, they didn't think it was all that serious. Weird, but maybe not dangerous. They just kept saying that Lynn had to be playing some kind of weird joke. Maybe for YouTube, Rebecca offered, if only half-heartedly. Chris didn't think we should involve the police just yet. He offered instead to go with me, and I readily accepted. He reasoned that calmly talking to her, trying to coax her into going willingly, was the best recourse. I agreed to do it this way. At least I wouldn't be going into that house alone. We drove over this morning, just after breakfast. There was no way I was going at night. When we pulled into the driveway, my stomach began doing somersaults. Her car wasn't there, but I still didn't let my guard down. The front door was ajar, and for a split second, I thought we'd see her eyes staring through the gap. I was shaking and starting to sweat. Chris, however, was fine. He waited for me to open the door, his hands in his pockets, like he was going on a fucking stroll through the park. I envied his ignorance. I pushed the door open and was immediately hit with the stench of rot. Chris smelled it too, and he walked in the house behind me with his nose scrunched up. "What do you guys use to clean the floors around here, shit?" Chris mumbled. "Shut up," I said, my eyes darting around for any signs of Lynn. The house was deadly quiet and dark despite being 10 in the morning. All the curtains were closed up tight and refusing to allow any sunlight inside. If I hadn't left it just 2 days prior, I'd have thought the house to be abandoned. We moved through each room, carefully checking any place that she might hide, occasionally calling her name. "Why the fuck are you looking under the couch?" Chris asked eventually. "Aren't you looking for your wife?" He was looking at me like I was a moron. "Let's just go upstairs," I whispered. He shook his head but followed me up the stairs and checked the bathroom and the spare bedroom. On the way up, my shoes crunched over pieces of glass that looked to be littered over a few of the steps. I noticed that one of Lynn and my wedding portraits that hung on the wall along the staircase had been smashed. The frame hung crookedly, all the glass removed. I stared at the picture, a lump forming in my throat. We had taken that photo just after leaving the church, after saying our vows. She looked so beautiful in her white gown. I looked at Lynn's beautiful face. I never dreamed her face would ever be a source of terror for me. We climbed the rest of the steps, checked the spare bedroom, but it looked completely untouched. I was hesitant to go into the bathroom, my fear from that night coming back to me all at once. Chris noticed and offered to go in by himself, but I couldn't let him do that, so we walked in together, checking the closet and the shower. The bathroom looked as if it hadn't been touched since the night I left. "I don't think she's here, Ben. Why don't you go pack some clothes and we'll try coming back tomorrow or something," Chris said. I nodded and went into our bedroom and shoved some clothes into a duffel bag. When I checked inside our closet, I came across the source of the smell and gagged. Chris took one look and lost all color in his face. He had to go stand by the stairs to get away from the sight and smell. I gazed down in shock at what lay inside my bedroom closet, soaking into the rug were at least a dozen eyeballs, all carefully laid out in pairs. Some were as large as a quarter, while others were as tiny as a marble. I stared down at the eyes that she'd collected from small animals, and I wondered how she'd gotten them, and shuddered at the thought. "Man, I thought I had it bad with Becca's shoe addiction, but fuck me, your wife's in here collecting eyeballs," Chris said, gagging. "Ben, I think we should go," he called from the hall. "I'm getting nauseous." "All right." I grabbed my duffel bag and shut the closet door on my new nightmare. I stepped out into the hall and took a deep breath of air. I could taste the rot in my tongue and I couldn't help but gag. "Who the fuck lines up eyeballs in their closet like that?" Chris mumbled. "I tried to tell you she needed help," I said. "She doesn't need help, Ben. She needs a fucking exorcist," he said. "You coming or what? I can't stand the smell any—" His words died in his throat. His eyes grew wide with fear. I didn't ask him why. I could feel it. Someone was watching me and I didn't think it was the eyes in the closet. I turned around, my eyes slowly scanning the room. "Christ," I whispered as I finally saw what we'd missed. Under the bed, curled on her side, watching us with excitement of a kid on Christmas morning, was my wife. She held her hands together just under her chin, and they were shaking eagerly. Now that she knew she'd been found, I could hear the quiet noises she was making, a sort of hiccuping sound in her throat as if the excitement was just too much for her. It was unnerving to say the least. Wide eyes and that same huge smile. Everything in me told me to run, but I forced it away. This was my wife. No matter how twisted, she was still the woman I married. I had to help her. "Lynn," I said softly. She didn't respond, but her head bobbed back and forth in two quick movements as if she were nodding. "Baby, I just want to help, okay? Can you let me do that?" I asked. I had taken a single step forward, approaching her like some kind of dangerous animal. "I love you, Lynn," I said softly, taking another step closer. She let a tiny moan escape her wide-open mouth, and I had to resist the urge to run. Her shoulders were starting to quiver, and her eyes grew as large as saucers. I crouched down so I could see her better and immediately saw the blood. Her hands were covered in it. They trembled more the closer I got, as if she was barely able to contain herself. "Lynn, are you hurt? You're bleeding," I said. She bobbed her head again, her bloody fingers moving up and down as if playing an invisible piano. She occasionally grazed her chin, leaving smears of blood on her skin. I wanted to recoil in disgust. The smell was coming The smell that was coming off of her was revolting. I could feel the vomit trying to climb up my throat. Her lips were dry and stretched thin, blood seeping between the cracks. I knew she wouldn't come out on her own, but I didn't want to leave her in the state that she was in. I scooted closer and reached out to her. The excited, hiccuping sound got louder and her hands shook, fingers flexing. It was then that I could see the blood oozing from in between her fingers. "Oh my God, Lynn, you're bleeding," I said, instinctively reaching out to take her hand, but before I could even touch her, her hand sprang out towards me. A sharp pain through my arm, and I fell back on my ass. My arm burned, and I could see the blood dripping down onto the carpet. I looked back at her in shock, saw her grinning madly, her fingers clutching a large shard of glass. "You all right in there?" Chris asked from behind me. I turned my head slightly and nodded to him, cradling my arm to my chest. When I turned back to face Lynn, I saw her focus had shifted. She wasn't looking at me anymore. She wasn't smiling anymore either. She was staring past me, her eyes glaring at Chris the way a hungry lion might stare at an antelope. Her mouth was hanging open, but it was twisted into a snarl. I got to my feet and began walking backwards down the hall, afraid to take my eyes off her. "Are you bleeding?" Chris asked. The moment the words left his mouth, Lynn started fast scooting out from under the bed, the glass shard still in her fist. "Chris, run! Go!" I yelled. He must have been too afraid to move because the second later I felt my back bump into him. He was still standing at the top of the stairs, staring at the horror that was my wife. Lynn had crawled completely out from under the bed and stood in the bedroom doorway, her face twisted in rage. Her whole body was visibly tense. Blood ran down her fingers and onto the floor. "Jesus, Lynn," Chris said. You playing hide and seek?" I reached back and pushed him towards the step. "Move your ass, Chris," I said as quietly but firmly as I could. Lynn bobbed her head in fast, sharp motions and began to grin, stretching her mouth wider and opening wider and wider so that her chin seemed to touch her chest. I heard Chris mutter a prayer and then was running down the stairs. I stood at the top of the steps, stuck between the love of a woman who clearly needed serious help and self-preservation. "I only want to help," I said, choking back tears. Her eyes focused on me once again as she slowly lifted the glass, holding it out in front of her. And then she started sprinting towards me, grinning with utter excitement. Thankfully, my body took over and flew down the stairs, skipping two or three at a time. I made it to the front door before I felt her leap onto my back, wrapping her arms around my neck, her open mouth next to my ear so that I could hear her terrible hiccuping sounds up close. I shook her off of me, knocking her to the floor. I felt a searing pain in my back as she went, but I tore open the front door and bolted to my car. Chris was standing in the front yard talking on the phone with the police. I didn't say a word. I just ran to my car and jumped in. Chris took the hint and followed me, still on the line with 911. I watched the rearview mirror, sure I'd see her there running after us, but I never did. I went straight to the ER and got 11 stitches in my arm and 3 on my back. The police asked a lot of questions and went back to the house to do a search, but of course, Lynn wasn't there. They advised me to stay with a friend or a relative for a while and to file a restraining order as soon as I could, but none of those things would matter. Somehow, I just knew. I dropped Chris off at home and went to a motel an hour away. I wanted to put as much distance between me and Lynn as I could. This is where I've been for the last 4 hours. I thought maybe the police would find her. Maybe they'd get her the help she desperately needs. But now I don't think so, because 40 minutes ago, I got a text from an unknown number. Just 3 words. "I found you." And a picture attached. The picture was dark and grainy, but I instantly knew what it was. There was no mistaking my wife's eye. I started typing this out immediately after. I don't know what to do. I'm alone and scared, and I can't help but feel that I'm being watched.
God damn it.
There it is, and there it was.
No, that was fucking terrifying, Abby.
You're welcome.
I thought the wife was going to end up being dead the whole time or something.
Me too. When they smelled something, I was like, or I thought he was just seeing her act like that, yes. But she wasn't. Like, he had killed her, and then he just, like, lost his mind or something. Yes, oh my.
Exactly what I thought too.
But that's, like, actually really scary. Like, they didn't find her, and we don't know what the hell's wrong with her. And her mom, who knows what she was doing?
Yeah.
Back when she was a kid? Weird. Mm-mm. Psychopaths and stuff? Hey, guess what? They look like regular people, like me and you.
That's true.
Sometimes it takes marrying them before you're like, oh, something's not right. Mm-hmm. How creepy. That was a good one. Well, that was that, y'all. We had a little bit of a double feature today, some hospice stories and some creepypasta stuff. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that. We went from being sad to extremely scared. So hopefully that worked out Thank you guys for joining us. Make sure you follow us over on Instagram and join us on Facebook, GIMME The Creeps. Thank you guys so much, and we'll see you next week.
So, did we give you the creeps?